Hello everyone, this is Mike Quinsey connecting the light. My guest today is James Taylor, who has just released a book called The Assumptions, and he believes he has a message that will resonate with you, and he wants to provide a fresh view of how human spiritual energy, that is the energy we have collectively created, has framed the world we live in, and how we collectively can change it through our assumptions. So welcome to the show, James.
Thank you very much, Mike. I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you on. Perhaps you might tell us, how did this all start with you, sort of your interest in these types of subjects, and how did you come to write the book?
Well, good question. I didn't originally plan on writing a book, actually. I was investigating sciences about how we exist as human beings and really what we really know about that, as opposed to esoteric information or theories. And in the process, I began interviewing both scientists as well as leaders in the spiritual world and the religious world as well, to drill down on everybody's ideas about what the truth of the matter really was. What do we really know? And some answers started coming to me that literally set me back a ways, because I kind of put me back at zero and reset my way of thinking about how we exist here. So from that, a tremendous amount of investigation has occurred and led to this point.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, you've got quite a, as we might say, a checkered background. You were a director of marketing in China. You've worked heading up the telecommunications group. This seems quite a departure from your usual background.
Well, it's even stranger than you may think. I started off as a cattle rancher, and I also artificially inseminate cows as well. So it is quite diverse, and I was very fortunate in the charters that I had with Pricewaterhouse and Bell South and Unisys, to have the time to spend in those countries, particularly in Asia and the Middle East, to learn about their religions and their cultures as well, and also to experience firsthand and listen to witnesses who had experienced firsthand real miracles in their life. And in fact, you know, Mike, one of the things that really sponsored my interest in the assumptions was I realized that miracles were occurring in every belief system, and the miraculous things happening weren't that different, but yet each of those basic belief systems ascribed to an idea or an assumption that only their way worked. And that sponsored my investigation really into the sciences, to try to help unravel that mystery, because it's causing a lot of problems on the planet and divides us all up.
Right. So you say that there is this link between all belief systems. Do you mean sort of religious and non-religious groups? Wherever you look, you find there is this thread that runs through it.
There is a common denominator scientifically that kind of underpins them all. In other words, think about the religions in the world, particularly since they're so dominant in front of everyone. They teach you what to think about a certain matter, and then they teach you how to feel in relationship to that matter, and then indeed teach you what to do physically in response to that matter. So what they have really done, all of them, is synchronize three of your energies that you yourself are generating and control, thought and feeling, and then actually doing physically. And by synchronizing those three aspects of a being, and that's literally what they are doing, then your commitment through free will to that idea fully, without reserve, then has tremendous creative impact, and it creates undeniable experiences And by the way, if I have an undeniable experience miraculously, then I'm doing you an honorable thing if I want to convert you to my belief system so that you can enjoy the same experience, right?
Mm. Yes.
So indeed, I am doing an honorable thing to convert you, but the fact is I'm making the assumption that it was the theological and the doctrine part of the belief system that I ascribe it to that made it work, and it wasn't. It was the way we're all wired as human beings that created that impact, and it's the same with all of them.
Yes. I liked your comment that the knowledge allows people to stop judging other beliefs by acknowledging theirs is not the only one that works. I think that's very well worth bearing in mind, because humans seem to have a natural trait where they are very judgmental and they strongly hold their beliefs.
People are very convicted in what they believe, but you understand it's by their very conviction that's actually creating the potency of their creation. You see, because what most of us do, or a lot of people have done, and I'm sure you have done, is that sometimes you'll feel a certain way about something, but you may think a little differently about that. And then thirdly, you might actually do something even different than those two. And when you are doing that, you're completely unsynchronized. Your three energies that you are generating are not synchronized together, and the potency isn't there. But when you commit freely to that which you believe, whatever it is, and with all of those energies, then you are sort of in the groove, as they say, or in the zone, as athletes get. You are in a very potent creative process, and it attributes to all of them. Now, one of the pieces that's kind of missing, and in fact, after I wrote the book, the sciences themselves kind of took on their own life, and I began investigating additional sciences, including esoteric sciences as well, and see what else do we know about being human and these energies that we're generating. And what I did discover is that we can actually measure the energies of our thoughts and the wavelengths and the impact of those and our feelings. And there are experiments that show not only that they exist and how we identify them, but the impact that they're having molecularly on atoms and physically and chemically on our, in our own cells. So we've identified and found in science those energies in process and measured the impact of them. So it's no longer an argument of do we have these energies to synchronize, but that they are being synchronized, and by the way, religions do that very well.
Yes. Now, you apparently studied the sciences, religions, and spiritual philosophies from around the world. Just as a matter of interest, did you find any particular spiritual philosophies more helpful than others?
I'm sorry, any particular spiritual, did you say cities?
Philosophies.
Oh, philosophies, yes. Well, actually, yes. I mean, some of the Hindu faith, part of their doctrine, if you might, and foundation is very helpful. Believe it or not, even Scientology turned out to have some real good technologies. I'm not sure that I agree with everything of any of them as far as their theologies go. But some of the modalities or technologies they've developed are very good. You know, one of the things that I know a lot of people don't think much of Scientology, and some people do, but at least they alone as a religion or organized thought system and belief system acknowledge that the universe is inhabited by other beings besides us and actually deal with that and advocate it. And I had to applaud them for at least giving credence and acknowledgement to the rest of the galaxy and the universe besides Earth. The other religions tend to acknowledge the universe and then immediately ignore it as though it was unoccupied.
Yes.
Right?
The existence of other beings, does that in any way affect your own beliefs?
Well, You know, one of the chapters I wrote in the book, in the Assumptions, was about reincarnation. Oh. And I happen to support that. And if that's true, then we are existing in different dimensions or different spaces within this dimension all the time. And there has to be more intelligent beings than us. I would hope so. If you look at the world we put together here, surely there are other species that could do a better job, right?
Hmm. Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So in the chapter on reincarnation, I basically propose some ideas, and that's part of what I've been doing is exposing the assumptions that lie underneath some of the belief systems to show what those assumptions are that are required to make that belief true. And if you look at those assumptions, then you may or may not be able to agree with your own assumptions, and if so, that means the belief is based on something you can't actually agree with. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Yes.
So the scenario that I described in the book was pretty simple, and I dealt with abortion, in which a lot of my Christian friends particularly suggest that the aborted soul goes to heaven. And their God that they believe in and describe their beliefs to would never send a young soul to hell, of course. And they don't believe in reincarnation. So there's only one thing left, and that's heaven. And I thought, well, gosh, if that's really true, then based on their own theology, the assumption is, or should be, that you should reward the mother for taking all the risk out of that soul's life from going to hell. Right? That
yes.
You've just done it a favor and send it directly to God and Jesus. So, indeed, you've sort of done it a favor. And I thought, well, if I ever get anybody pregnant again, I think I'll just abort them, ma'am. Because I don't want to put any risk of them not surviving. I'll just send them straight there. It's like a free ticket. They said, no. That's not what we mean. But when you look at the assumption, that's actually what they're saying. You follow me? But reincarnation, of course, introduces a third option and says, well, it's no big deal. You get another chance. You come back.
Yes. I think you're getting into the area of free will, the responsibility for what you do. And since you believe in reincarnation, then I'm guessing that you also bring into the subject the idea of karma. So I think the fact that we do have several lives and that we move between this earth and other dimensions in between does mean that an aborted soul obviously is not, I think as some religious sects believe, effectively murdered. And I think that is their worry, isn't it? It by aborting a soul, a child, they feel that you're murdering it, whereas I believe, like you, that the soul is immortal.
Well, that's, you make an excellent point. And in fact, there's a salient point that goes with this, and that is that if that is true, and they do believe that it is murdering, and in fact, the belief is under no circumstances it is murder allowed, that thou shalt not kill foundation, but yet we do kill. We have a system in this country based on self-defense, and we also have capital punishment, and we build militaries that are geared and built and trained to kill people. And that seems to be okay with those same people, so as long as they're consistent, but they're not, you see. One of the scenarios I had with some protest with abortionists in Atlanta one time, as I asked the leader to explain to me their position, and that was it, that under no circumstances should you kill another being. But I gave her a scenario whereby someone broke in her house and they had knocked her out and they started attacking her daughter and taking advantage of her, and she wasn't knocked out and she had a gun loaded next to her. She grabbed the gun, pointed at the guy. He then turned on her. I said, do you pull the trigger? And she said, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, wait a minute, what about the absoluteness of thou shalt not kill? It's wrong to take any life under any circumstance.
Yes.
See, in that scenario, Mike, she is now the aborted soul and the child, because the attacker is, because he has no control over whether she pulls the trigger.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it's a bit of a problem, really, to get round this idea that killing can, in any circumstances, be justified. And I believe there is only one religion where the followers can perhaps adhere to that, and that's probably the Buddhist. But I think if you were confronted by someone that was threatening your life or your family, it would be very difficult perhaps not to use some defensive means, even if it went to the extent that somebody died in it.
Well, you know what? You're exactly right, and it's a difficult question. But to help with the answer to that scenario, then take a piece of paper out and make a short list of the ways you would like to be killed.
Right. Well, it wouldn't have anything on it, would it?
Well, exactly. And everybody feels the same way, you see.
Yeah, yes. The only factor, I think, that does come into it, and we can't know the circumstances in every situation, is karma. We come to have experiences, and clearly, as I see it, some people do come into life to have a short life's experience. So that means there has to be some way they leave. Now, they could die through some form of illness, but there are accidents and things of the like, which means they can depart the earth when their experience is complete. So it's a rather big subject, isn't it? The more you think about it, the more avenues there are.
It is an interesting subject, and in fact, I kind of boiled that down to two simple ideas, and that is that for those people and their belief systems that agree that there is a basic agreement before birth that you will enter into this life and take this role, maybe die early or be killed or whatever, that those agreements are made ahead of time. And the other is that that's not true, and that you have no predestined time frame or experience, that you didn't agree to it. Those are the kind of the two flips there. On the latter, where you didn't have an agreement, then understand for those, especially for people listening, that you are operating under two sets of laws. You have universal laws that apply to all beings of any type that allows them to be. And then you have physical laws when you enter 3D in this experience, and you're going to be governed by those. So it's not by randomness that you might be born into a circumstance whereby the physical laws terminate the physical aspect of you. And it's not necessarily your agreement or your fault. And so you're still subject to those physical laws once you're here, and sometimes they get in the way. I mean, somebody ties you up and throws you in a hole and feeds you gas fumes for about 4 days. I mean, it's not like you actually chose to do that, you see.
No, it's a very big subject, but I think it does pay people to have an open mind about that if they don't really warm to the idea of reincarnation and karmic responsibilities, but there we are. Now, you talk of the energy that we have collectively created. Now, would I interpret that as being our mass consciousness, and how do you think that affects us as a race of people?
Astoundingly is the answer, and tremendously. But there's a little maybe foreplay that we can put in front of this that might help explain the answer to that. There are some experiments that anybody can Google and look up on YouTube if they'd like. One's called the Phantom DNA experiment, which shows that the energy that we're generating being measured and on a collective basis is the next part of this, raising the ante, right? But first understand that we can measure it on an individual basis. the experiment's pretty simple. They had a vacuum. They had photons, which are light particles, bouncing around inside. And they put a piece of human DNA in it. And the the photons lined up in an S-curve, meaning they weren't random anymore. They now had order. And there was something communicating between the DNA and those light particles that caused that to happen. And that says, okay, here is a human piece of DNA. It's communicating non-physically to light particles. We see it happening. We don't know exactly what it is, but we know it's there. They wanted to duplicate this experiment. It was done in the U.S. the first time in the U.K., so they took the exact piece of DNA with them to see, to make sure it was consistent. When they left, the DNA left an energetic footprint. You know how psychics are used on these TV programs to hunt down criminals and blah, blah, blah. Well, they always ask for do you have something that belonged to them, a hairbrush or something? Mm. Well, the DNA in the human being is leaving an energetic footprint where they go. This shows that footprint being measured. And in this instance, in this experiment, it lasted for about a month. Not because it went away, but because the equipment's only so sophisticated to keep measuring the diminishing footprint. So we found through our own DNA energy that we're generating that's leaving an impression even after we leave, you see. So,
yes.
So that's one aspect. There was another experiment done with DNA where they were showing a group of people, films that made them go through a series of emotions. It made them sad, it made them happy, and some were erotic, some made them angry. And they had DNA from those people being monitored across the country in a lab with some very special equipment that allows them to actually see and visually the double helix. And when these people would feel any type of negative emotion, something derived from fear versus love, then the DNA tightened up like it was wringing out a dish rag, literally. And when they felt love or something positive, the DNA strands on the double helix relaxed and expanded. So there it is again.
Yes.
There are human emotions, and that's the only change in those human beings, was the emotions they were feeling, communicating with their own DNA being measured. There it is. So we found it again, so we know we're generating that energy, and we know it's having impact. You see?
Can we then take that a stage further and say that we then also affect somebody else's DNA?
Well, you what a great straight man you are. That's the second part of that experiment.
Right.
They then took other people's DNA and put it in proximity to these same people and measured the impact, and yes, it did have the same impact on other people's DNA, too.
Hmm.
So
that's interesting because it shows that we have an input that we maybe don't realize into what we call the collective consciousness. Our reality then is the result of our collective visions or our emotions or whatever.
The funny thing is, to that collective, is that the way that we are all wired as human beings, the only contribution you get to make is yours.
Hmm.
That's the only thing you control, and in fact, that's where free will really comes into play for human beings. The collective, by the way, that was your original question. I didn't answer it, and I'll answer it now if you'd like. There's two groups that have kind of been the leading scientists in that area, and one was something called PAIR, or the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Lab at Princeton. And originally IBM had come to them and asked them to find out why some people using computers, the computer went haywire, and others seemed to have no problems with the computer at all, same computer. and that there must be some interaction at some level between the human beings and the technology, because some people just made it mess up. And so they funded them to start this research. Well, after, I think, 3 million experiments that they've done over 30 years, I'm going to skip that part, but that part's also very interesting, by the way. They came up with something called a random number generator, or a RIG machine, which is a random event generator. And essentially it records random events that would occur in zeros and ones. So for example, they had people that would concentrate on having a software application generate more zeros than ones, when in fact the software was written to put an equal number of zeros and ones, but random. And they found that people could actually control the outcome and generate more zeros than ones. Well, that spawned a lot of interest around the world, and they wound up with about 60 of these machines spread all over the world in different labs for people doing the same thing. And some anomalies started showing up, and they couldn't figure out why. All the machines started registering what they run all the time, registering these patterns at the same time exactly, and they didn't understand it. And as it turns out, when there were events like Lady Diana's death or the O.J. Simpson trial, and in fact, the peak in the readings on all of these machines worldwide peaked on the very second of the verdict of the O.J. Simpson trial. The world was watching. So when human beings focus their attention on one idea, these machines are picking it up. I actually have the graphs from 9/11 and the grid, electromagnetic grid that connects us all, peaked right at those three impacts so significantly that it was an anomaly. I mean, it never spikes that high. I also found the NOAA satellites from the weather stations, which are monitoring the electromagnetics in the atmosphere, and they spike too at exactly the same time. So that means when human beings are collectively focused on any one idea, we're actually impacting the electromagnetic grid of the planet. And the scientists know this now, but most of us don't. So that means that any time you get a group together collectively, that you're going to have impact if you are synchronized and focused on the same idea.
Yes. I think I can claim to have experienced that in the past when I've meditated in very big groups. I guess that is really what you're talking about, isn't it? It's people focusing on an object or a thought or an idea or whatever is the subject of the meditation.
It really is, and in fact, some of the esoteric research I've done provided a pretty good explanation of how that happens. Would you like for me to elaborate on some esoteric information I discovered?
Yes, please do. Yes, yes.
Well, normally I stay mainstream with most of the interviews I do, because a lot of people have a hard time with esoteric information simply because you can't really verify it. But in this instance, it fits with what we know in physics and quantum layer, so it's consistent. The thought energy and the emotional energy that we just alluded to that had been measured individually or collectively are simply energies that are less dense in nature. Therefore, they don't have physical aspects to it. It hasn't been fleshed out, so to speak. But as the teachings of Esther Hicks and the Law of Attraction, once you collectively give energy to that some idea, that idea starts taking form in a less dense energetic world, 4D, 5D, if you might.
Yeah.
And primarily the thoughts are occurring in the frequencies in fourth dimension. So the very idea of giving those collective energy from any source, you or your group or more than your group, that just happen to resonate with the same idea. I mean, all your thoughts aren't original, right? For every thought you have, there's another million people out there that feel the same way.
Yeah.
So you are collectively, even unknowingly, assembling an image, if you might, a hologram, an idea in a less dense energetic environment, and it will sit there and take root. Given enough energy, it will physically flesh out and manifest as reality here. So that means that everything that we really have, we own it. We did it. It's ours.
Yes.
We can't blame God. We can't blame the government. We can't blame anybody. We collectively are doing that. And that makes us, as a human species, extremely powerful.
Yeah.
And now's the time for us to be cognizant of that and start using it a little better, don't you think?
Oh, yes. And I think spiritual messages for a long period of time have made it quite clear that we create our own reality. And it's interesting that you touched upon photons, because there is a school of thought that this solar system is actually going through part of a photon belt. And when it becomes intense, it will be part of the reason for us ascending. I'm sure in your travels you've heard of the idea that the process of ascension will have a key point in 2012. So what you made me think of then was that there are a lot of people who are looking at that time, which is only a few years away, and in their minds they're visualizing some sort of upliftment. So in actual fact, they are contributing to making that a reality.
Indeed. You know, there's some natural occurrences that are galactic type of cycles that we're going through that line up at 2012. And then there are personal cycles that we are going through. And our contribution to manifesting what will happen is tremendous. One of the stories I heard, and again, this is esoteric, so there's no true verification, but I've measured, again, against mainstream science of physics to see if it tested against it, and it really is consistent also, is that the vibrational level that we have collectively and are generating, and that's not just human beings, by the way, Mike, everything is made of atoms, and those atoms are vibrating, and those vibrations are creating frequencies, and everything is composed of it. So earth, air, wind, water, all the elements, everything that exists has some vibratory contribution. We're very powerful because we do it consciously and willingly and through free will. Tables don't make the decision necessarily to be a table, but it's still vibrating and it's still sending off energy, right? As conscious human beings, we have that freedom to do. And if we don't raise the vibration level high enough, then the ascension portals that would allow us to evolve out of 3D into 4D and maybe 5D or beyond won't be operable. So it's a very critical time. And if this idea is true, then it means that it's even more important, the messages we keep hearing esoterically through channels and other sources, to be positive and operate out of love, to raise that vibrational level of the planet. And by the way, if you clean the water up, it vibrates higher as well.
Yes. Yeah.
That collectively the Earth itself and the people on it have to achieve this, I think it's referred to as an accretion level, such that ascension can take place on a mass scale versus individual scale. Mm. And if we fail, there's even some that say, well, this is the last time the cycle happens, so we'll no longer be an ascension planet after that. Our fate would be sealed. So this is kind of like a last opportunity. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but even if it's not, I think raising the vibration level on the planet and knowing we can do that and how we do it is just a dead burn good idea.
I would completely agree with you. We only have to look around now and also at our history to come to the conclusion that there must be some form of life we can enjoy that is far better than what we've been experiencing. And it's up to us to, as it were, make it happen, I believe. Now, you're speaking about water there, and I know you have an interest in Masaru Emoto. Tell us a little bit about what he discovered where water is concerned.
Did you say Masaru Emoto?
Yes.
Yes. You know, his research is very controversial, or has been, and I think people would like to understand why that is and how that has actually panned out, because I'm sure most people are familiar with Emoto's work, having photographed crystallizing droplets of water and watching them crystallize as they were exposed to human emotions or the words representing those emotions. And when they crystallize, the positive ones make them look beautiful and the negative ones make them look quite ugly. In fact, I think one of his famous ones is, "I hate you, I'll kill you," words next to it made it look like frozen vomit, actually. I mean, it's just grotesque-looking formations when negative emotions are applied to it. And here's the controversy, is that in trying to repeat those experiments by Emoto, a lot of people could not do it. And they thought that his work was flawed, indeed. And now we understand that those that were trying to prove it not to be true, that their very intention was generating energy in proximity to the experiment, or non-proximity, and directly influencing the outcome. That's human energy, too, you see.
Yes.
And so they even tried doing it where no one was aware of when the experiment would be done. But yet, those that knew of the experiment that didn't want it to succeed were still having influence on the outcome.
Yes, yes. Well, indeed, they were proving their point, because they had the wrong approach. Shall we say they were negative because they didn't want it to succeed, so they were actually creating the result they wanted.
Yeah, exactly. So they were actually proving that it did work, and it was disguised as a flaw.
Yeah.
Dean Radin, who's a great scientist, then finally did conduct the experiment under very controlled circumstances and duplicated it, and he was able to achieve significant results with it. So first, if anybody hears that Emoto's work is a farce or is flawed experimentally or clinically, they need to understand that it has been reproduced now, and that those emotions being there by people are affecting water. And you're mostly water, and so is the planet. In fact, everything that's green is mostly water as well. And that suggests that energy that we saw in the DNA, the energy that we have seen out of the collective as well, from our emotions and our thoughts, that those are affecting water, and most of this planet is water. So you would have to be absurdly naive, if not just stupid, not to acknowledge that we are impacting the entire world.
Mm.
I mean, yes, indeed. I don't know how you argue that that couldn't be true, if indeed we accept the premise that that we affect water. And as we've already seen, we affect our own DNA. So why would we not be affecting water as well? Is it like immune to our own energy? I don't think so.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of something that Prince Charles once said, and people were amused by it, was that he spoke to his plants to make them feel good. Well, he's not such a fool, is he?
Yeah, it's a wonderful time looking back at the old sciences as well as what's going on in the new sciences today. And I think in some lifetime I must have been a frustrated scientist, and I came back this time and missed my bill.
Right. Oh, I think we have some clues at times as to certainly why we are here, and I suppose we may have a feeling that we link with something in our subconscious mind that is a product of a previous life. I think it certainly shows up where people have a very avid interest in one particular, say, subject. It makes me think of youngsters that as soon as they're old enough to talk, they can say, "Daddy, I want to be a doctor." And through their whole schooling, they never forget that, and it's a driving force, and sure enough, they become a doctor. I have to believe that the impetus for that is something you're born with.
Which would lead us to the most interesting technology and science out there, which is DNA.
Yes.
DNA is probably the most interesting area that I have researched, and it's so exciting. And Bruce Lipton has done a marvelous job of turning that entire science upside down about 10 years ago, and it never stopped. And in fact, there's been a real paradigm shift in that technology. And DNA is really an interesting subject matter. You alluded to what we're born with and how that might be a part of, you know, our DNA. We become a ball player, right? As a kid, we dream and we actually visualize being a certain something. Well, I don't want to run out of time here on this call, but I'd like to explain one aspect of that that's really important. We used to believe that DNA was the roadmap, which unraveled itself as over time, and we developed according to how that roadmap was drawn up. And now we realize that DNA has no ability whatsoever to turn itself on or off. It doesn't dictate anything. It resides in the cell that has filaments outside of the cell looking for the environment that you're giving it. And it reacts to it. And the DNA is just a big library of instructions on what to do when that environment is detected. It's simple. So, you know, we only have a couple of ways of doing that. What we eat, obviously, shows up at the cell walls. You eat arsenic, and it goes down there. The filaments see it and say, "Hey, what do I do with this?" And the DNA goes to the DNA library and says, "Oh, that's arsenic. You better run. You know, close down. Go in protection mode. Beef up the immune system. Fight it." If you're eating high-dense organic nutrients from a vegetable, it reaches the same process. The filaments see it. It says, "Hey, DNA, what do I do with it?" "Oh, man, turn on the reproductive system. Start digesting. Let's do some stuff." So it's a big library. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is that you mentioned about kids when they're young wanting to be a doctor, and then they grow up and be a doctor or a baseball player or whatever. Well, we found something called the engineering gene in the cell. And that engineering gene was ignored before. And the engineering gene has a job. It aligns amino acids into a gene that can then be a part of your DNA. And we now think that that's been going on all along. So a great deal of your DNA that you're unraveling as you're going along, you actually put the genes there yourself. By what you believe, and what you think, and what you focus your human energy on. So it means that not only can we change our DNA, I mean, the old dog new tricks thing is definitely in play here because it's kind of hard to undo, but we have been creating our genes all along based on what we're thinking and feeling. We moved it from our conscious thought and feelings to such a point where it was so ingrained, it moved to the subconscious, and it became part, through that engineering gene, a part of your own DNA. You did it. So don't blame God, and don't blame, you know, your parents. Now think of what I'm telling you here. That's free will, isn't it?
Absolutely, yes. Now, I think you said that the real lesson at the moment is survival. Would you say that your book helps in that direction?
Yes, and unfortunately, even as much as disclaiming as I had done with the book, I have offended quite a few people that cannot move past their own dogmatic positions to understand the real message in the book. I think it helps because if you understand now, scientifically, that you are manifesting a reality and you are contributing to the entire electromagnetic existence of this planet, and your contribution is the only one that you're controlling through free will, that the scientific process that you're using is exactly the same for every belief system, bar none. And if you can comprehend that and acknowledge it, and this is science, I'm not making this up, then you can appreciate that everybody's belief system is working correctly. And you no longer have to divide the world. And if people come to you and try to divide you, don't listen. Because you know that it's not true. You can unite around that process. And by the way, let somebody comes to you and says, oh, hey, Mike, hate infidels, hate black people, hate Americans.
Yes.
Then the first thing you know is that that very demeanor is changing your body chemistry and your cellular structure, and it's shutting down your immune system, and it's putting you in fear mode. So do you really want to do that to yourself? Is that good advice? You also know that you're making water look like frozen vomit. Do you really want to do that at the atomic level of the water? It's responding. So when a belief system or anybody in any organization advocates anything whatsoever that would invoke a non-loving response from you, then be selfish. Do you want to do that to yourself first? No. Do you want to do it to the planet? I don't think so. So that one D mark, that one understanding of how you are existing as a human being and why all the belief systems work exactly the same way, means that we can rally behind that one idea and change this planet in an instant.
Yes. When you think of all the power that we clearly have, it tells me that we are very much responsible for our own health, because if we think negatively or attract these lower energies to ourselves, then clearly we're having an effect on our own body.
Well, that there's some great work being done in Russia right now that comes into play. Remember, we were talking about the idea that you're seeding in 4D with your thoughts is less dense energy, like a holographic image.
Yes.
Okay. Well, in Russia, they have shined a laser through a healthy cell embryo, and when you do that, it creates a holographic image off to the side. Same thing if you shine it through a cell of a leaf. Same thing happens. The entire leaf shows up in a hologram, even one cell.
Yeah.
So they took the holographic image and they focused it on a contaminated cell, a sick cell. And the sick cell healed itself overnight. And they did the same thing with a salamander embryo and took the salamander embryo's holographic image and focused it on a frog egg. And the frog egg birthed a healthy salamander. So what that means, literally, correlating back to this discussion, is that when you are giving energy in a holographic way to being healthy in a less dense environment, 4D, then that is what is going to start manifesting and fleshing out in 3D, just like this did with the experiment with the Russian scientists with the holographic data. So you're building that yourself. So indeed, you want to be healthy? And, you know, be healthy. There was an experiment done, I hate to keep going with this, but I just did an infomercial for a diet program with a doctor friend of mine that does HCG detox diet. And one of the, where was I going with this? The experiment that we talked about was a group of maids that were given a lecture on how their very motions that they go through in their daily job of changing the beds and blah, blah, blah would make them lose weight. And it wasn't true. The study wasn't done, but that's what they told them. And the a control group of maids were not told this. They monitored for 3 months. All the ones that were told that it would make them lose weight, they lost weight. The ones that didn't, didn't. The only difference was what they had in their mind, what they were thinking, what they were holding as an image and an idea that then fleshed out physically. So why couldn't we use that for our own health? And that was your question, right?
Yeah. By the same sense of reasoning, I can see how placebos work. In other words, if you believe something is going to work, you're creating that opportunity.
Exactly. There's some grad students in London last year that did a great experiment on that very idea. They invited a bunch of college students to a bar to try out a new flavored vodka, and it was free, all they could drink. And the only caveat was they had to be interviewed the next morning. So they did. They all got drunk as a skunk, and I mean, there were fights, and you know, people were getting mad, and so the next day there were a bunch of people. They were all hung over, blah blah blah, and they told them that it was just flavored water. It was all in their head.
I love the idea of that. I can see all the clubs and pubs selling flavored water now.
Yes, profit on it. Exactly. I mean, that's the idea was fun, but it proves that the placebo effect is real. But it's no different than a religion teaching you what to feel, think, and believe, is it? You yourself chose to believe that it was alcohol. You thought it would get you drunk, and you did.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, if you couldn't vouch for that, you may think, no, that can't be true. But look, James, time's absolutely flying by here because we're having such an interesting conversation. I've got a few minutes left. I would like you to tell people where they can obtain your book, and you might like to give them your website address.
Well, thank you very much. And in fact, I want to tell you that I do a lot of radio interviews, and you must have a really large following out there because the announcement on your webpage put a huge spike on the hits on my webpage already. So
right.
You have a really big following out there, and I really appreciate what you're doing here too. My website is theassumptions.com, and people can order the book from there. I have both international and domestic pricing, and I'm sure they'll get it is mind-provoking, and I'm sure they'll enjoy it. I also would like to, for anybody that's interested, look at the lecture section as well, because I've been giving lectures now for about 8 months on all the sciences for just a human energy update, and it's completely mainstream, no esoteric information. And I've given it to high schools, churches, metaphysical groups, green groups, and businesses. All assimilate it in a basically the same way because it's science. And it's if anybody would like to contact me to do some lectures, I'd love to do it. Obviously, I like to talk, right, Mike?
Right. Have you given your website address?
Yes, theassumptions.com.
Yeah, that's preceded by... oh, no, I'm looking at your email address. Do you accept emails, by the way?
Yeah, it doesn't require www. I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Yeah, I was looking at your email address and wondering why you hadn't said James Taylor. So it did bring to mind to ask you whether you entertained people sending you emails.
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt you. There's a contact email and my phone number, actually, that you can reach me on the website.
Right, that's fine. Okay. I think we have to finish there, James, and thank you very much for a very interesting 55 minutes, which I think we've just about made. I enjoyed it thoroughly. Thank you very much for coming onto the program.
Mike, thank you, and it's been a real pleasure, and maybe we can do it again sometime.
Yes, indeed, yes. Have you Any ideas for more books after this one hits the heights?
I'm actually writing another book right now, and it's going to be appropriately entitled Human Energy.
Oh, great. Well, I'm sure your assumptions, it's got to be very well received. So thank you again. I've just got time to mention my guests for next week, which I shall do. Got to find me lump of paper here first with all my notes on. Bear with me a minute. Yeah, my guest next week is Dr. Kevin Ross Emery, who speaks about Reiki, spirituality, has written a book about what he calls Experiment Earth and Atlantis and Lemuria. So he's someone who can cover a range of subjects, and I'm sure once again we can look forward to having a very interesting interview. So thank you for being with me. God bless you all. Hope you can be with us next week. Goodbye.